Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, president and founder of SMIE Consulting. And each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, we bring you this live look at three issues that have popped on our international education news feeds in the last few days. And today we're going to be covering three new topics that we haven't had a chance to review for the last few weeks or months. One of those is a new survey by WES that has to do with international student safety in the United States. We've seen in the past some stories of prospective students, international students, and their views on studying in the United States and safety in the United States. And I'm looking forward to sharing some of the results of this study kind of give you a perspective on what current students, and that's one of the important differentiators with this WES study, on what current students within the United States are feeling as it relates to international education. We'll also be taking a look at Clearing Week in the UK and what that has meant for has meant for admissions offices at UK universities. And we'll wrap up with a look at the international e-expectations, Ruffalo Noel-Levitz e-expectations report that assesses digital, social, and mobile trends amongst prospective students. It's a U.S.-based survey, but they have done international versions in the past, and there's a lot of parallels between what we've seen in the past on U.S. and domestic students in terms of their digital habits. So we'll share all those with you in just a few minutes as we get into this week's roundup. Again, for those of you who are listening on the podcast, thank you for subscribing. It is available. The Midweek Roundup is available on audio podcast, on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, and many other favorite platforms for listening to podcasts. So please subscribe today to get this in audio version while you're running or working out, or just needing a cure for insomnia, whatever the case may be. So we appreciate you listening in if you're on the podcast. And, of course, those of you that are here live, thanks for joining me this week. Really looking forward to getting into what I see as some of the more exciting stories that we've had in the last few weeks. Obviously, we'll talk about China a lot next week, I'm afraid, which seems to be a recurring theme. But we'll certainly go in depth into a lot more in the next few days and weeks as the new academic year and a fresh recruiting season is actually already underway for most international admissions staff around the country. So for those of you who are new to the Roundup, SMIE Consulting was created 5 years ago to help institutions and organizations develop better overall strategies in reaching intended audiences, whether for U.S. institutions looking to recruit abroad or for international organizations looking to better communicate their messages to either U.S. or international audiences. So we founded the Roundup a little over a year ago to address some of these live issues that we face in our daily jobs in international education. And we've also developed a newsletter that goes along with the Roundup. The Roundup comes out on Wednesdays, as you know, but we have a newsletter that comes out each Monday that features both social media and international ed news, and it covers about 10 to 15 international ed stories and 4 or 5 social media stories, and then we highlight 3 of those international ed stories during the Roundup each Wednesday. So if you'd like a copy of this week's edition, I've dropped the link into the comments section on the Facebook page for Monday's edition of all the SMIE news fit to share. Welcome to subscribe to that newsletter as well, so you get that fresh in your inbox Monday mornings. Now, let's get right into this week's topics, and we'll start with the WES survey that I mentioned. For those of you who have been regularly following the various surveys that exist out there that purport to show huge swaths of prospective students' intentions in terms of where they're looking for university study. There's IDP does a great buyer behavior report each fall. IDP Connect through what used to be Hot Courses now has been doing a student satisfaction survey in the spring. But there are a lot of different surveys out there. BMI has done them. NACAC has done them for domestic students. There's been agent surveys, all these other things that are out there. And great resources and great to sink your teeth into and kind of as you search for data to help support doing what you do in international ed. I bring this one up particularly as a particularly unique survey because the West Report looks at not prospective students, but rather current students and their views on particular safety and also gun violence in the United States. The personal safety, these kinds of issues are very much on the minds of prospective students. We already knew that because of the exposure that any gun incident that occurs in the United States and repeated gun incidents happen, massacres and what have you, that happen in the United States get huge press overseas and really paints a very different picture perhaps of what students on campus are actually experiencing. So what are the differences that we're seeing? The West Report, the title of the report is Dismantling the Lethal Threat to International Enrollment, Student Views on Gun Violence and Safety. So it's Dismantling the Lethal Threat to International Enrollment. So that's an interesting perspective in the way they titled that article. But what this is a survey of almost 2,000 respondents. These are current international students studying in U.S. institutions. It's addressing it in the context of declining international student enrollments. We all know we're in a period of that currently, with new international student enrollments dropping in the last 3 years. And that's been backed up by Open Doors data, as well as the most recent CBIS by the Numbers report, which we've covered that DHS puts out twice a year. Now, the concerns, IIE also did a survey of U.S. higher ed institutions that where they were in 2017 and 2018 on what they saw as some of the concerns in the marketplace, in a prospective student marketplace, of why student volumes, what the concerns were out in the marketplace. And that 44% in 2018, fall of 2018, said 44% of institutions surveyed listed concerns about physical safety as a contributing factor to declines in international enrollment, up from 33% in 2017 and only 12% in 2016. So the IDP survey I mentioned earlier backed up those findings as well, that they surveyed under 3,000 prospective and current international students, where the U.S. placed amongst the major English-speaking destination countries for international students, U.S. placed dead last amongst the top five in terms of their, top four largest English-speaking competitors. The U.S. placed last in the 2016 and 2017 surveys as well for safety, in terms of student perceptions of safety. So the SWEST survey we come to, of 1,921 international students, results will be released later this fall. They look at several dimensions of the international student experience related to safety and security. This particular survey article examines the results through different lenses and suggests some specific responses for higher ed institutions. So certainly something I recommend that all of you get a chance to take a look at. And again, the links to all of these stories are in the comments section on the Facebook page. But this West survey results, nearly 9 in 10 respondents report, the good news, report feeling safe from physical harm or acts of violence at their individual institutions. Fewer, although still a vast majority according to the report, feel safe in their local community. So kind of looking at their campus and the community aspect. A similar distribution hold perceptions of verbal harm or harassment as well. So this is encouraging to see these kind of results. That though perceptions from the outside looking in before they got here were, oh, they're really concerned about their safety, or 44% according to the institutions were concerned, and a larger percentage obviously of students being concerned in general about safety in the United States. But the students that are here now on their individual college campuses, the general overwhelming majority feel safe from harm at their institutions. That's from physical acts of violence as well as verbal harm or harassment. So that's encouraging. That's probably the one bright spot from this survey, And one that I think we all know intuitively on our campuses that students are generally going to be safer than they would be in larger metropolitan areas than on a maybe a rural or suburban college campus. So we know that, but this is some kind of data that helps us back that up in terms of the, as we've always talked through the You're Welcome campaign, through just general good practice on social media, is how involved are your current students in what messaging you're trying to get out to prospective student audiences. This obviously says a lot about how these current students may have heard about all these negative things that were happening in the United States and may see that on the news, but where they are on their institutional campus, in their local communities, the general perception is that they feel safe. So, what are some of the troubling issues? They tend to be issues where students have opinions or concerns about the potential that exists for becoming a victim of a shooting. And they, one student from Mauritius puts that solely at the feet of how, according to the student, anyone can have access to a gun in the U.S. And that can and could be a potential victim of a shooting. So though they feel personally safe on their campuses, they're still worried about the potential for gun violence. Concerns are higher in their community, obviously, than their campus because they don't know that as well. In their local community, nearly 2 in 5 respondents, some 37%, expressed anxiety about gun violence. So lion's share do not or disagree that they're worried about gun violence. 68% on their institutional campus either strongly disagree or disagree that they're worried with the statement, I'm worried about gun violence. So still overwhelming majority, though not quite as much, over 2/3, still are not worried about it on their college campus, but are more so, 55% only, are less so, are 55% are concerned about it in their local communities. So again, more of the unknowns. So the differences by setting are important. So that's important. And the West Report does go into a lot of other details that do tend to share some concerns, particularly regionally, depending on where they're from, with particular students from Southeast Asia are the most worried about at their institution and in their local community, are worried about the challenges of potential gun violence. There's some great data points in here that are good for us to know. And again, this is perspective that is even better, I think, for international admissions folks to know as it relates to how they can then turn this information around to help share with prospective students the issues that are going to be important to them. So there's a lot of good recommendations down there. Of course, it's having students be part of the front lines in terms of getting your message out. Recommendations for higher ed institutions, expanding access to safe and affordable housing, expanding access to safe transportation and services and practices, providing students with accurate information on local laws and customs, as well as their rights and responsibilities, collaborating with key campus and local stakeholders, and developing interventions targeted at high-risk international student populations. So really some solid data here from WES, and one that I think institutions should be taking closer look at as they look at their overall messaging campaigns to prospective students, as well as how they deal with their own current students, of course. So, very interesting perspective on that. There's going to be more to come, I think, from this West survey later in the fall. So we'll keep an eye out for that and certainly make you aware of that next time we see it on the roundup. So next up, we go across the pond to the UK. And for those familiar with clearing in the UK, that is the time when after A-level results become available for mostly domestic students, but students around the world that take A-levels, that will find out about their places at where their scores get them in terms of university places, then when they get their final scores. So there's a lot of activity, particularly domestically, surrounding clearing week, where positions become available and places are offered and all of that time for institutions. But what they're finding, even amongst some of the top institutions in the UK, Their top tier groups or institutions are called our members of the Russell Group, kind of our Ivy League plus group in the United States. Interestingly, more students, the title of this Telegraph article in the UK, more students go straight to clearing as Russell Group universities drop grades to take extra applicants. So this is reflecting a trend that they're seeing in the UK where institutions were perhaps, there's over 12,000 students in the UK that apparently waited until after their A-level results came out before they started looking for university places. So as opposed to the U.S. process where students are applying in the fall of their final year for entry the following fall and then finding out somewhere in the middle there about whether they're admitted. So here are these students in the UK now who are waiting until after they get the results to even apply to universities. So institutions that might in years past have had their places close to full in terms of conditional places they might have offered based on predicted A-level results on students who had applied earlier through the UCAS system are now finding out that their classes aren't as full as they needed them to be before A-level results came out. So they're now having to maybe drop their entry requirements, so particularly at these Russell Group universities that are dropping, the report is they're dropping their entry requirements in order to get enough students in the system and to fill their classes for the fall. So interesting to see that. It's a subscription-only report, but you get the gist of the report here in the beginning of that. And then we now have another opinion piece that's come out from Joe Grady in the UK that is related to, this is from the General Secretary at the University and College Union, her name is Joe Grady, and she says in her opinion piece in the Guardian, in another London paper, that university admissions fail students, let's give places for real grades, not predictions. So she's actually leaning in favor of this trend where students are actually waiting until they get their, it's certainly not a majority, but students are waiting until they get their grades before they actually apply. So I'll pop in the link to the this Guardian story that covers that. And that's one that I think is interesting to see that, can you imagine in the U.S., if we waited until after students got their AP results or got their final transcripts from their high schools confirming that they actually graduated before we offered them admission, and the time crunch that would put on admissions offices over the summer, before the fall deluge of students arriving on campus happens. So this opinion piece says that shifting university applications until students get their marks in the summer would avoid the scramble for places on A-level results day. And I'm a little bit, scramble for places we don't really quite understand that from a U.S. context. But in terms of once this clearing happens, it is sort of almost a free-for-all. Where in the past, students received offers, as I mentioned, based on predicted marks from what they were predicted to get on their A-levels that they have in the fall of their final year, of their second year of A-level studies. There are more universities that are now kind of pushing the boat back, kind of what we would do with early action or early decision in the United States that would have fall deadlines. What we would call unconditional offers. Everything's conditional, really, until we actually get the results. But we will at least make unconditional offers. So as they're trying to call these in the UK. So it's interesting to see where that's going to go if the trend is towards that. 6 years ago in the UK, apparently only 1% of students were getting unconditional offers. So that number's growing well over a third now. Almost 40% received at least one unconditional offer this year in the UK. So you can imagine just that kind of a process and how unnerving that would be, and certainly would be for international students with the length of the visa process in the United States, where students are told they can't apply more than 120 days or 4 months before their program start date. if we started doing that in the summer, before we could even do admissions, and then make sure if everything else is in order, financial docs and all that, to give them in May, June, student or Chinese students graduating in July from their high schools, waiting until that time to issue I-20s and admission letters, that would just be inconceivable for U.S. purposes. But British universities have a more streamlined admissions process, obviously not as layered and complex. There are doctoral programs where students can apply in the summer and start in the fall that same year. So it's really a bit of a challenge, and obviously a very different system. Their visa process is not as complex as ours. So there are some certainly advantages that they have, but in terms of pushing the boat out, in terms of the time it takes to before you know you got a class in, enrollment managers here in the U.S. would just lose their minds if that were to happen. So can't see that happening. But one thing that we can say is an increasingly growing trend in the U.K. is just the real jumps in student interest from China. China is already the number one source country of international students studying in the UK, both at the secondary and boarding school level, as well as English language and university level study. So we see this all the time in countries that have become, we've seen it in Australia, and we'll have some story, at least one story next week about how dependent Australian universities are on the Chinese market. We'll talk about it here with this story from the Pi News on China being the main driver of international numbers to the UK now, that in last year alone, there's been a 32% increase in accepted applicants from China through UCAS, that's the University College Admissions System in England. So that data certainly, and that's a record number of 33,630 international students from outside the UK have been accepted in degree courses in the UK. And that record number of international students from outside the UK is driven by a third increase in the accepted number of Chinese students going to the UK. So, and even despite UK is looking pretty good right now, and the government seem to be reinstating post-study work and maybe liberalizing some of the other visa issues that cap researchers and scientists in the UK for talented individuals. So there are certainly a lot of positive signs for the UK university system in terms of their enrollment management issues that they have had over the last decade are now seeming to soften and go in the right direction. So we see a lot of options are opening up for Chinese students around the world, not just in the UK, but also Australia. And that has come at the expense of the United States. There are universities in the US now that had become very dependent on Chinese applications and students, enrolled students, that are now feeling the pinch. Over the last 3 or 4 years, they've seen declines. And the declines you can almost draw a direct connection to where they are going instead, to Australia, to the UK, and to a lesser extent to Canada. But we're seeing some great movements in international student mobility. We've known that was coming for years. The pie is getting increasingly bigger. Yes, that's a good thing. There are more students out there that are globally mobile in terms of their international, their education needs. But it's also becoming increasingly competitive, not just for Chinese students, but also for countries like the U.S. that are losing students to China, losing Chinese students to other countries, but also their destination countries like Canada have been increasing dramatically. New Zealand is seeing has been on the up for a number of years, but also non-English-speaking destinations are seeing incredible growth. China is by far the biggest surprise. They are now in third or fourth place globally in terms of a destination for international students, not just the largest center of international students abroad, but they're also one of the top destinations now in the top five. They're closing in on 400,000 international students, maybe 500,000 in the next couple of years. Huge numbers, obviously. That's part of their soft power Belt and Road Initiative, that bringing students from around the world to China to study. so in helping to improve their own institutions. So there's a lot out there. China is going to be almost a piece of almost every story we do, it seems, these days, but certainly one we want to pay attention to. We're going to wrap up now with our last story, and that's with the 2019 e-expectations report. For a few years, when I worked at College Week Live, now Platform Q, they had partnered with Ruffalo Noel Levitz, the initial originator of the Trends Report, on an international version of this. But they've also, now the expectations trend report does give you a lot of great information on what international students, what domestic students are relying on to as part of their search, and this is their trends on how they're using technology, how they're using social and mobile sites for what they do in their college search. So here's some of the kind of high level stats. 54% of students report that they prefer websites that allow them to personalize content to meet their interests. So are you, and for institutions, are you personalizing your web pages as much as possible? That are you giving easy to see degrees offered and how the student will fit in at the school, details about academic program, those are the things that students want to see. Program offerings, an ability for the student to see how they will fit in, and the details about the academic programs. So that's what they want to see. What drives students away? Lack of visual appeal of the site. Hard to see which programs and degrees are offered, and hard to read pages. So keeping in mind that why are some of these things hard to read? They're looking at them on mobile devices, and maybe there's just so much text on a page and no images and very visually unappealing. So something that I think needs to be an important piece of any web strategy, digital strategy, are these elements on what students prefer and what they do not like at all. So keep those in mind with your website and digital footprint is how well you address these issues. Again, this is all information on the U.S. market, but there are certainly going to be a lot of similarities to what this might mean internationally as well. So another data point, students get information about colleges and universities from multiple channels, including forums on your websites, listing on standardized testing applications, college planning sites. So 76% get them from will do forms on your website. 54% will see your information on when they're filling out standardized testing applications. 49% are using college planning sites. 40% do campus visits. And 39%, the lowest rated feature, are responding to mailed brochures and information. So that would probably be the least useful. Campus visits and that be the least useful in terms of physical campus visits, and physical mail the least useful for internationals if you're doing a comparison. So what's the solution for institutions? According to this Higher Ed Live report from Omni Update, it's creating a layered marketing campaign with multiple channels that reach students from different angles. So next, that means particularly on social, who's responding to posts on your page? If it's from parents and alums, then if they're responding to posts on your page, then do you have a strategy that addresses that? Let's take a look at one of the last data points here. Is 76% of students overall will complete a form on your website to get more information about your college, but 40% of seniors will stop completing a form if it asks too much information. So very important, keep it short, keep it simple, and then build your relationship from a very base level and then go from there. So there's a lot of great data in here. They reference Snapchat quite a bit in this data that for U.S. students certainly is going to be particularly important and as well as some other digital sites for college research on Instagram and Twitter versus whether they use that for their personal use or daily use. That's something that's some great data here that's well worth checking into. I certainly encourage you to get a hold of that. Again, if you're looking for an archive of these Midweek Roundup stories, certainly you can check that out on our Facebook page, but also our YouTube channel for SMIE Consulting. And for those of you on the podcast, thanks again for subscribing, and we look forward to chatting with you in the weeks to come. Have a great day.